Welcome to MGO Podcast 12.28. I know everything is very sad, but the future is amazing. All right, folks, we took a bit of a pause to gather our feelings after Michigan crashed out of the NCAA tournament in the Elite Eight, losing 51-49 to UCLA in one of the more painful games I can remember. But speaking about painful, if you use anyone other than our sponsors, you'll probably regret it. That's not a threat. It sounds like a threat, but didn't mean it to be a threat.
They appreciate it, I'm sure. We want to thank Underground Printing for making all this possible. Check out their wide selection of officially licensed Michigan fan gear at their three store locations in Ann Arbor, or learn about their custom apparel business at undergroundshirts.com. Let's also mention our associate sponsors, Ann Arbor Elder Law, the residency in Ann Arbor downtown, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Information Entropy, the Raw Power app for iOS by Gentleman Coders, and Homesure Lending, who was sponsoring our MGO blog tournament coverage this year. Also, we are recording this on SignalWire. So, SignalWire is Zoom if it didn't suck and had a baby with Slack. And I didn't play with any new features today, but I hope everyone's enjoying the much improved sound quality of these podcasts since we switched over from Zoom.
All right. Maybe we need to break that up into two different segments because we have a lot of sponsors now, which is nice. But
sure.
Not so nice. Michigan's offense against UCLA. I don't know.
Do you grade on getting to the rim, or do you grade on like getting the ball in the basket itself? Because
you look at the Torvik stuff, and it's like UCLA had 9 shots at the rim, and Michigan had 25, and you're just like, what are you gonna do?
Mm-hmm. It's a very visual podcast. I'm currently chewing my face off. Just one of those games. I mean, Johnny Juzang hit a whole lot of shots, and nobody on Michigan could really do that. And
yeah,
that's just kind of how it goes sometimes. I mean, this was definitely the game where Isaiah Livers' absence was most notable because he is Michigan's most reliable shot maker, and nobody on Michigan was making shots. And this really felt like a game where, you know, those like mid-range post-ups at the end of the clock where he fades away and those shots are unguardable could have really made a difference when Juzang was hitting some pretty similar stuff. But that's why... Juzang is a fringe NBA prospect, and it was frustrating because, defensively, yeah, everything else went great.
You can't really...
Bogner shuts down Jaquez, and nobody else scores.
No, Tiger Campbell hits, like, a couple of mid-range jumpers that he's pretty good at, and cans 1-3 to get to 11 points. He has 2 assists and 2 turnovers. Like, it just... The other team scored 51 points, right? Like, you're going to win that game more often than not.
And that was UCLA maxing out. Like, the shot quality that they got and the ability that UCLA has, 51 points was all they were going to get against Michigan. That's not like they just missed their shots.
Yeah, I mean, there's maybe a different scenario where Riley gets some more minutes instead of fouling out in 18. But, yeah, I mean, I think it just goes back to, you know, you go look at Austin Davis's numbers in this game, which is kind of a weird place to go, but he's 3 of 6 from the floor, and you know where Austin Davis is shooting from, and you know what he usually hits, especially against the kind of big that UCLA is putting out on the floor. Like, he shot 70% this season. So you take one bucket there, you take that hook and hold that didn't get called, despite being the most flagrant hook and hold I think I've seen in the history of the rule. You got the five consecutive missed free throws from Mike Smith and Hunter Dickinson. You have Wagner going 1-10 from the floor. You have Smith going 1-7 from the floor. And
I mean, you could, you know, Michigan draws up a potential game-winning play that gets Franz Wagner a screamingly open shot that he does not hit anything on. And it falls directly to Eli Brooks, who has more time than he thinks he does. And so he tries to flip it over his head on the fly when he could have definitely come down with it and, you know, tried to go back up in a more controlled manner. And it's just one of those things where you look at it and you go, well, I don't know what you do. Because, I mean, there were people criticizing the play call. And it was like, I mean, first of all, you've got your you got the ball in the hands of your lottery pick. And the way that UCLA defended it left him with nobody within like 15 feet of him at the top of the key.
Yeah, I hate when people talk about like they don't like a particular play call, because it's not like in football where you're calling like all slants, right? Like every basketball set is based off what you react based on what the defense is doing.
And UCLA went under. Very under.
Emphatically. And the only thing that, you know, I kind of think about in that situation is like, okay, you're down 1 point. You know, the 3-pointer doesn't have that added value that it usually has, because it's either you make a bucket and you're very, very likely to win the game, or you don't make a bucket and you're very unlikely to win the game. So in that situation, even though they were going under, you know, to me, I think the move is still to attack the basket, especially when you haven't been shooting well at all.
I think they were down two on that one. It was the possession before that, they were down one.
No, the Wagner three, they were definitely down one.
They were down one.
Okay, so you're thinking about the one at the very end of the game.
Yeah.
But first of all, that came with plenty of time left, and you, in that situation, you do have to think about the possibility of UCLA also having at least a very short possession. And a 1 point lead does not do anything for you if they hit any sort of shot. A 2 point lead might.
Sure.
And I mean, that's a shot that Wagner has hit a lot. And you practice certain spots more than others. And on that play, the read when guys duck under that hard is to stop and shoot a screamingly wide open 3-pointer.
Sure.
Because I would much rather have seen that than him kind of work his way in for some sort of half-hearted, suddenly contested pull-up, or, you know, take a step in and shoot an in-between shot. It feels like a play where we're judging it almost entirely on the result, and the result was bad. It was ugly.
So is there really much more to say about this game? I don't want to, like, shirk our duty here, but, like, we didn't hit the shots and they hit just barely enough kind of seems to cover it, I guess. I mean, I guess Dickinson goes 5-10 from the floor here and has four turnovers. So I feel like, you know, the second half of this season, he really kind of got scouted to death, and UCLA is sitting on that right shoulder, and, you know, his average degree of difficulty on his shots went up as the season went along, and he's going to need an off season to kind of polish up and become more of a more diverse in the post, and then maybe recapture the first 10-15 games of his career.
Yeah, there are two things he really needs to work on. As you said, the fact that opponents have scouted that he is pretty much always trying to get to his left is something that in offseason, especially in offseason with Juwan Howard, should improve considerably. I mean, they're going to get him going over his left shoulder, working on his right hand, because, I mean, UCLA was overplaying it so hard, and he still wasn't turning back to his right hand, and when he was, it didn't go great. I suspect that'll be a much improved thing next year. The other thing is his season did change when opponents started really throwing hard doubles at him, and while it did open up the offense for a while, as teams got better at timing it and kind of changing things up, not always throwing the same coverage at him. When they did throw double teams at him, he wasn't always great at keeping the ball high, making a quick read and not turning the ball over. You know, he was able to get caught off guard a little bit. He wasn't always sharp hitting those skip passes that he was hitting a lot of the time when Michigan was kind of running real hot in the middle of the season. So there's a lot of stuff that we've seen flashes that he's, you know, certainly capable of shoring up these holes in this game. And this was unfortunately a reminder that he's a freshman.
Indeed. All right, let's take a break and start looking towards the future.
. 2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing is three convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages approximately $100,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Hey, so I have, like, insurance and stuff, but I don't really, like, know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He okay. looked at my insurance and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together, and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life, too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease. There have been rumors that Michigan is going to get back two of their seniors, in Eli Brooks and Shondi Brown. Now, Shondi is a little bit more speculative right now because I think that's mostly coming from one message board insider, and it hasn't been as widely reported. But you know, Rivals put inside in one of their ITF pieces that they think Brooks is going to come back, and 24/7 has also reported stuff to that effect. So if Eli Brooks comes back, do you need to look at the portal at all, or are we just riding with what we've got?
I mean, considering how many players they'll have on the roster, if that's the case, you know, pending some attrition, of course, but I don't think there's going to be, you know, fingers crossed and everything, a lot of attrition from non-seniors here outside of Franz Wagner going to the draft, which seems pretty much a lock. But you don't want to recruit over your guys too much. So I think between having Zeb Jackson back for a sophomore year, bringing in the freshman class that Michigan has, where you have a couple of guys in Frankie Collins and Kobe Bufkin who could handle one of the guard spots potentially, plus multiple players on the wing that could maybe bump a player down a position. If you've got Brooks back, I think you are very comfortable, depending on how the freshmen look and how Jackson develops, how the rest of the roster shakes out. You can start him at either the one or the two and be pretty comfortable that your team is going to have a guy who's going to keep things really well organized and have an impact beyond his box score stats. And that would be really handy to have on a team that's going to be pretty young. So I don't think you necessarily want to then go in and hit the portal for another player who's going to be new to the system when, you know, the guys that have committed to Michigan are, you know, top 60, top 100 players. These aren't guys who came to sit. These are guys who came to play. And you don't want to develop a reputation of recruiting over the guys that you're bringing in.
Sure. You mentioned the portal. The Michigan is the only team in the Big Ten that doesn't have anybody in the portal, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a weird, I think, kind of it, just sort of the way that the roster is shaken out, where, you know, all the freshmen who are expected to get playing time this year got some playing time. And then Brandon John saw the court in a significant way. Adrian Nunez seems very happy to be Michigan's bench guy. And then Franz Wagner's either going to go pro or, in a very unlikely scenario, come back. There isn't really like an obvious transfer candidate. And pretty much every other team in the conference, there were some obvious playing time crunches and whatever. And
yeah, I mean, some of these are playing time crunches, but some of them are like, you know, Miller Copps in the portal.
That's true. Some of these were also your coach sucks and was or was not fired. And either way, that could be taken poorly.
And some of them are guys who are like would have been out of eligibility otherwise, but are just kind of looking for what happens for a sixth year. So like a couple of guys in most of these lists are just like, oh, this wouldn't have been happening. I think that's one reason that the portal has exploded so much, is that there's this extra year of eligibility people can explore.
And Michigan was very senior heavy this year too. So, I mean, they're graduating more guys than, you know, if they didn't have the extra 6 year, you know, Smith, Brooks, Brown, Livers, Davis, they'd all be out of eligibility.
So that's a no on the portal. I think if you get Eli Brooks back, I agree with that.
And there's, you know, there's possibilities beyond. I mean, Zach Shaw put out an article on the Michigan Insider within the last 24 hours that mentioned the possibility of not just, I mean, there, Mike Smith's return has not been ruled out, although it seems less likely than what was being reported out about a month ago when it seemed like he was actually the most likely senior to come back. I assume they'd only bring back one of Brooks or Smith. I don't think they're going to pack the roster too heavily with returning seniors. But Austin Davis is also a possibility. And given the fact that Michigan is a little thin on bodies up front, as long as he's willing to accept that Musa Diabate is going to very much be the backup center over him, he's a guy who could basically function as an extra assistant coach. And you can never have enough playable big men, because you never know what happens with foul trouble. There are some other than, you know, Isaiah Livers almost certainly gone. Franz Wagner, almost certainly gone. Almost everything else in some sort of combination is on the table.
Yep. And so the roster next year is going to look extremely solid and extremely deep. But why don't we take another break, come back for another segment, and start talking about what that actually looks like.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGLO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them. You should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
. 2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing is three convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor downtown. All of our best to the MGO Blog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Mama said that the growing pains won't end. It's the little bitty waves that'll keep the tide at bay. Time glides to imaginary lines. Crazy winter day, moving only in a day.
We're gonna break up a way too early preview of next year's team by assuming the following things. One, Brooks comes back. Two, Wagner's gone. And three, I think we're going to operate under the assumption that the other seniors are also gone. And then we'll kind of talk about like a Shawnee alternative scenario. So starting in the front court at center, Michigan gets Hunter Dickinson back off Big Ten Freshman of the Year season. 26% usage, shot 61% from the floor, but we've mentioned that dropped a lot over the course of the year. Shot 74% from the line, 11% offensive rebound rate, which is not quite top 100, but pretty good. And two Dickinson there, adding Musa Diabate, who is at the very least going to be a monster defensive center.
Yes, and with Diabate, you also get the flexibility of playing him at the four. So this is going to be a situation where, Dickinson is certainly locked in at the, as the starter, but
and is going to play, you know, 30 plus minutes, you know, pretty much however much he can handle without getting into serious foul trouble. But Giabate is going to be a remarkable changeup to have at center because he provides a completely different look than what Dickinson does. I mean, this is going to be a switchable terror, a guy who's a much more vertical athlete, a much more explosive athlete, somebody who you can run every variety of pick and roll coverage with. And then on offense, he's going, again, the kind of vertical aspect of his game is going to come in terms of he's going to be more of a, you know, lob threat off the roll, and less of a, you know, use it to post up. And you're also going to be able to spread the court with him more because he's able to put the ball on the floor and attack off the dribble. He's got some legitimate guard skills for a 6'10 guy. The jumper could be a bit of a swing skill here, but even if he does not have a really polished shot yet, just his ability to set screens and put the ball on the floor means you have to kind of hedge up on him a little bit. You can't let him operate freely out there, or Michigan's going to be able to get wide open jumpers with their guards. So I'm really excited to see what Giabate adds to what's already going to be a lot of fun with Dickinson up front.
Yeah, and his shot came around kind of later on. The scouts are saying that his and especially Matt D, it was, you know, did a lot of talking about Giabate when I went to the game with Matt from Endless Motor, because, you know, he's a huge Giabate stan. But he said that his shot is really coming around. Like, it's not expected to be a 40%, but if he can match Franz there, that adds a whole new dimension to the offense.
Yeah, I watched chunks of their game against Sunrise Christian, and he had a couple of face-up jumpers, one that was actually pretty close to the three-point line. It's a high school three-point line, of course, so it's not a college three-point line. But, yeah, I don't necessarily think he's going to take a lot of threes, but I think he's got a shot at being a guy who kind of chips in occasionally there when people just leave him alone. And we'll see. The other option at the center is you might get some break glass in case of emergency minutes from Brandon Johns. But between Dickinson and Giabate, I think that's going to be all of your center minutes. Where Johns will come in is the four. So Isaiah Livers is gone. Michigan is bringing in a couple of freshmen, but Johns is a senior who's, I think, proven over the course of the last 2 years that when Livers is out, he's at least an acceptable starter and could be more than that if he's able to, you know, take a step forward. So he shot 57% from two this year, 37% from three on just 19 attempts, which is a little bit odd because Johns got a lot of playing time last year and got up 55 threes, which he hit at a 35% clip. So that's fairly, like, he had about the same number of twos last year as he did this year. And then this year he just didn't take nearly as many threes, despite being, you know, I would say an established plus 3-point shooter, or at least a guy who, when he gets an open look, he should take it. Excellent offensive rebounder, too many turnovers. Able to contest at the rim pretty effectively. You know, he's very bouncy, and Michigan was running a lot of high-low stuff between him and Dickinson kind of late in the year. I would expect that to continue because it's a really powerful way to use kind of a two-big lineup. And Johns has enough flexibility that a two-big lineup with him isn't just going to be, okay, we got to go inside. No, he can stretch the floor too.
Yeah, Johns may, I mean, that, those high-low sets made a massive difference against Florida State, just kind of breaking what they were trying to do defensively and finding a way to get the ball into Dickinson in really good position. We've touched on, you know, the big minute Brandon Johns effect. He played 16 games this season where he saw at least 10 minutes and therefore qualified to have an O rating on KenPom. He had an O rating of 100 or better in 14 of those games, and in only one of them was it significantly below 100. He's been very consistent when he has the chance to be out there. He just has had issues finding playing time and, you know, has also had the well-documented wavering confidence that in part comes with having your role get jerked around as much as his has. So I expect him to be not just a, you know, acceptable starter, but a significantly above average one, because I'd say that's what he was over the last five games of the season when he plugged in to replace Livers. It was he provided a lot of what Michigan needed, and I think there's plenty of room to explore, you know, the high-low stuff, stuff out of horns, double drag stuff. I think there's a lot of his game that can be more fully incorporated into the game plan once Michigan is building it around, you know, knowing that Johns is their starting four heading into the season.
The there's a aspect too that, like, Michigan, since I think Ellerby, has not been a very good fouls drawn team, and now you got Dickinson, who's, you know, most likely going to learn a little bit more patience and be able to draw a couple more. Giabate, who's going to be just, you know, a huge hassle down low. And Johns also draws a lot of fouls. So Michigan could be a team that, like, really puts your front court in a bind in the just in that case. I mean, we haven't even talked about Williams yet, but he's another guy who kind of, you know, likes contact.
Well, so the backups here are probably going to be, as you mentioned, Williams and Giabate. I figure you're looking at 10 or 15 minutes for Giabate at center and then another 10 or 15 at the four, just depending on, you know, how good is Johns, right? Like, if Johns really has a breakout season, you might see Giabate limited to 20 minutes a game. But if he's just kind of the same level, Giabate might get 30. And then Williams, spot duty this year, did not shoot the ball well, did show some pretty good chemistry with Dickinson in those high-low sets. And if Michigan is building more of their offense around that next year, then I think he might be able to carve out, you know, a few minutes a game where he can kind of be the high-low Dickinson feeder. And I think for him, the thing that you really worry about is his shooting. So he was 1 of 14 from 3 on pretty much all excellent looks, and he was also 11 of 20 from the line. Now, in high school, he was a guy who took outside shots and did fairly well with them. And we do see that freshmen often kind of have an adjustment period where they're getting up bad shots because they're in the bench crew. But Williams, you really want to try to see that tick up to at least acceptable if he's going to be able to get on the floor next year.
Yeah, that is obviously the swing skill for him, because everything else looks pretty promising. I mean, he's a decent passer, and a lot of the issues in his game would be shored up by just being able to play without defenses sagging 5 to 10 feet off of him. And the good news is that the shooting sample from this year is very small, much smaller than the one that he put up in high school, where he was at least a passable shooter. And I'm not seeing anything like it. This isn't, you know, a no gel Eastern style shot where you look at it and you go, well, that's just not going to ever work. Like, it doesn't look terrible. They're just not falling. They just weren't falling this year. There's certainly a hope that those shooting numbers come up, and that would make him a really interesting guy to also potentially play at the three, because then you could really get some serious smash and grab lineups there. If he's going to do that, he absolutely has to be able to shoot. And we're just not going to know until we get into next season. So I expect, thankfully we should be back to a fuller schedule and actually be able to get a more extended, like, play, experiment with your guys in games where you can afford to do that, period.
Well, and Sadi was telling Sam that, let me start that again. Sadi Washington was telling Sam Webb that he does hit those in practice. And the other thing is that, like, the reason he was getting on the court is every time they do a scrimmage, whatever team they put Terrence Williams on just happened to win. Like, he's, you know, really an energy guy. He's kind of a guy that the other players like. So he's one of the, especially with a young team, he's someone you can kind of put out there and maybe just get the juices flowing again.
There is one more option here in freshman Will Cheddar, but I kind of think that might be a redshirt situation.
He looks like he's probably a year away from being a potential rotation guy. So, which to be expected. He was the last freshman in this class, really, when you're looking at the rankings.
Yes, and he plays most of his games against literal cows. So
Yes.
I shouldn't have said literal. I'm sorry, guys.
was figurative cows really better?
Yeah, figurative cows are better. All right, the three, one of the more open questions, because you just don't have a returner here in any way whatsoever, but it's really just going to be Caleb Houston, because he's 6'8". And doesn't press and is probably the best shooter in high school, according to Matt D. Shot, I think, 50% last year from three. I don't know what his numbers are this year, but 6'8", rangy, has some ability to put it on the floor, but just has a really mature game for a guy coming out of high school.
Yeah, the evaluation on 247 calls him a perfect stretch four, which for Michigan is your three, with how Juwan Howard likes to play these enormous lineups that are still skilled, and also mentions his feathery catch and shoot jump shot. You don't see feathery very much in scouting reports, but that was Brandon Jenkins from 247. But Houston's definitely the small forward, and given that he comes from Montverde, where he's played against extremely high-level competition for both in practice and in games through his high school career, you can expect that his game, especially since it isn't super reliant on athleticism either, is going to translate pretty fast. And hopefully there won't be as much of an adjustment period as there could be for some freshmen. And he's going to be asked to do, I would expect, to shoulder a fair amount of the scoring load early, especially depending on what the both the returning and freshman guards provide in that aspect. But he's a top 10 player in the country. Those guys are fully capable of jumping in and leading your team in scoring.
Yeah, and he's I just feels like a guy who's going to be not a primary driver of action, but a guy who, whenever you get him a shot, it's going to be an excellent thing for your team.
Yes, he's less likely to be the guy. It's not going to be like Franz Wagner, where everything's going to the basket. He's more going to be on an Isaiah Livers type path, where I think, especially early on, most of his stuff is going to be off of kickouts. But Michigan should have some guys who are able to either slash and get to the basket, or you'll have Dickinson's gravity creating a lot of those opportunities too.
And here's kind of our Shondi Brown hypothetical, is that if Shondi comes back, he's going to get backup minutes at the 3 and 2. And
or potentially start at the 2 and get backup minutes at the 3. Either one of those is possible.
One of those two. So he'll probably have a role pretty similar to what he did this year. Because Michigan is just going to be deeper, so I think that there are going to be fewer guys playing major minutes, but I don't think you can have Brown out there for fewer than 20, right? So
no, he's certainly carved out. He's earned that role at this point, and that there are more than enough. There's more than enough minutes uncertainty at the 1 and the 2 for them to find those minutes for him if he comes back.
So the alternatives, if Shondi Brown does not come back, are kind of speculative at this point. But Isaiah Barnes, the freshman, 6'6" guy with a great outside shot. Has been inconsistent in his college career and hasn't really gotten a lot of playing time as a senior because of COVID. I think Simeon, where he transferred for his senior year, just started up a couple of months ago, but he's been putting up numbers with them. And in a normal year, he might be a guy who could have been a riser, but just because he wasn't in front of evaluators for so long. If you look at his athleticism, just his bounciness is excellent, and his ability to shoot, you just combine those two things, you don't really need a whole lot else to get a pretty good college player.
No, and that's something that you could also say about Kobe Bufkin, who they brought in as kind of a swing man.
He's in the twos. So don't talk about him yet.
Yeah, sorry. I've jumped ahead a segment. But yeah, I mean, you've got in Barnes a player who could – he's got – the skills you need and that athleticism and size combination, this also goes for Houston, should make him a passable defender also. And with Michigan's size and hopefully some experience across the board, you know, we're doing the Eli Brooks assumption here, and you've got Johns and Dickinson in the front court. You're going to have a lot of rim protection and a lot of size. So being able to cycle through some freshmen on the perimeter might not hurt as much as it would on that end normally.
I think his comp is Livers, right? Like, that's the guy we're expecting him to grow into. And Livers was a
kind of Barnes is much bouncier. Like,
yeah,
he's a guy who will throw stuff down. I think a GR3 might be a better comparison. Except I think he's going to be like a better shooter. Like GR3 was always at 30% when he was at Michigan. And I think Barnes is likely to be more of a 36-40 kind of guy.
And GR3 was a similar prospect in terms of, like, I think his shooting at Michigan was largely kind of unlucky in that he has been a good shooter in the NBA. And
well, I mean, people
he was
develop.
A good free throw shooter. Yeah, I mean, yeah. People develop, but he also, I don't know. what I'm saying is that Barnes and GR3, similar profiles. I think that's not an unfair comparison at all.
You're going to have to give me some room there just because, you know, the guys that Juwan Howard is recruiting are not going to necessarily have a lot of comps to the guys that Michigan's had. Like, we're going to say GR3 a lot here.
Well, Jace Howard is another option. He's 6'7", got some deep bench time this year. We don't really know how he plays or what his outlook is, but...
And why?
But he flashed a little in those minutes, I would say, yeah. More than a lot of the other guys. He, you know, had some and ones, like, you know, was able to finish around the basket with some touch that, you know, considering he was initially getting brought in as a preferred walk-on, kind of caught me off guard a little bit, and he's plenty athletic. So if he could shoot, it could be, you know, a similar situation to Barnes where you're comfortable putting him out there because you've got kind of the two skills you need. And... We'll say, I mean, this is a deep team.
Yep. And we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about the backcourt.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the big house and accessible to ages 21 plus, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's
I need your rawest takes. I need takes so raw that they're my heart after the UCLA game. Ooh. Seth, give me your rawest take.
Tom Izzo will be the worst coach in the Big Ten next year.
Get out of here.
What, for... Why, like, why?
Because he was, what, third worst back this year? And they replaced the other two guys? So, like, who...
I only say get out of here because Chris Collins is still on the sideline. In
that's a pretty good one.
Chris Collins made some, made some chicken salad out of his team last year.
Absolutely not. Nope.
Craig Gard? I don't know.
A candidate. Emerging candidate.
They're re-signing Turgeon. They're going to give him an extension.
Yeah, but he's not, like, horrible. He's just perfectly decent. Mediocre.
Yeah.
I just think there's a very strong case that Izzo was at least the third worst in the Big Ten this year.
I wish I could agree with that, but I've been catching Aikens playing for Sunrise because they're playing IMG.
Yeah.
That guy can ball. Like, I don't know if he's a freshman point guard and Izzo buries those guys on the bench. If he buries Aikens, he will be the worst coach in the Big Ten, but I don't think he's got a choice, right? Like,
Oh, no.
He has no choice.
Well, Foster Lawyer, he tried to run with him all year.
He chased off Jack Hoiberg. He doesn't have that option anymore.
If Foster Lawyer plays like 20 minutes a game and like Aikens gets 20 minutes a game. Oh, they actually got a transfer point guard, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah.
They did. So
if Foster Lawyer plays any minutes next year, he'll be the worst coach in the Big Ten. We'll see. Ace, give me your raw steak!
Illinois is going to miss the tournament next year.
So this is obviously based on the assumption that Kofi Coburn goes pro, but Illinois just took a big man transfer from Florida who I don't necessarily think they'd be taking if they did not expect Kofi Coburn to be leaving. And I have to credit Michigan State basketball Twitter presence McMasketball for digging up the Bart Torvik numbers on this. The Illinois projection next year, if you subtract Kofi Coburn and add Omar Payne, said Florida transfer, they drop from projected to finish 19th in the country to projected to finish 59th. And
yikes.
I don't know. I'm just getting some bad Brad Underwood vibes, too. And this is with projecting Andre Curbelo to have 27% usage at a 103 O rating, which feels a bit optimistic with that kind of usage jump.
What was his usage?
27.
It was 27 last year. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean that's going to be these projections are, I don't know, conservative with usage, I would say. And then you quickly get down. I mean, the number two player on the list in terms of minutes is Jacob Grandison. Like, and then it's Georgie. Like, is that a tournament team? I don't know.
Yeah, they really did not follow up on the recruiting because their incoming class, like they got Miller, they got Curbelo last year, two top 50 players. Like they have a guy barely ranked, their two commits are barely ranked inside the top 100.
Yeah, so, and Adam Miller is in the transfer portal.
Yeah,
so.
Miller's in the portal, so... Like they're gonna have to hit the portal really hard themselves. Like the Payne is not the last guy that they're gonna be adding.
No, this can always change with transfer portal additions. But as it stands right now, no tourney for Illinois.
All right, my hot take is this: if Eli and Shondy come back, ring up a one seed again, baby.
Is that hot?
Is it?
I mean,
is that raw?
I don't know. Is it? I don't know. I mean, Michigan's had a total of 3-1 seeds in the history of the program.
They are really hard to get, so that it's fair. It's a very, very high bar. That said, I mean, we were already looking forward to this team before we thought that, like, the seniors coming back again could be a thing.
Right, so you're going to lose Wagner, you're going to lose Livers, you're probably going to lose Mike Smith. Can you make up that production by getting Hunter Dickens into a sophomore year? I think that's going to be a big leap. Those are always big leaps. And you're going to have a hugely improved backup center situation. No offense to Austin Davis, but
who might be back for all we know.
But I mean, Giabate is just going to be a completely different level as a defender.
He's a 5-star,
right? And then you've got. I think you can replace most of Livers' production with Caleb Houston, like because Livers developed into more of a playmaker as his career went on, you know, got inside the line a little bit more. But what he was really, like, where he brought all of his efficiency was as a perimeter shot maker. And Houston should be able to step neatly into that role because he's got long arms. He's 6'8". His shot's a little bit of a set shot, but it gets out quick. I just think that, you know, we talked about how Shaundi Brown was like a pretty contest immune 3-point shooter, and that's going to be Houston. So I think Livers' absence is going to be mitigated a lot. So then it's like, all right, what do we have at point guard? Well, if we have Eli back, Eli's not like going to have a massive assist rate, but in terms of getting Michigan into the offense and not having those issues where your offense bogs down because people don't know what's going on, check. I love Frankie Collins, who we're about to talk about. I just feel like I don't expect a whole lot of drop-off, especially because you know that the coaching quality here is very high and is going to remain very high.
Well, I guess the conference is going to be pretty good too again.
I mean, the conference should have a pretty big drop-off, right? Like, Illinois is going to take a huge step back. Iowa's probably going to take a big step back. I don't really know who's going to come up from the depths.
Indiana got Rutgers. Trace Jackson Davis back.
Yeah, well, okay, maybe they'll go 500.
Like, State should be better than this year, at least. Even,
you know, Purdue might
the worst coach in the Big Ten.
Purdue is very young, and they've got all their guys back, so I think that you might see them come forward.
And Matt Painter is very good at his job.
Yeah, and Ohio State's kind of tough to figure, right? Because you look at the roster, and you're like, I don't know about that, and then they're always pretty good.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and again, transfers are going to play such a huge part in this.
Yeah, we're not really going to know. Yeah. So, yeah, I feel like asking for a one seed in consecutive years does qualify as a raw take. But
fair enough.
The fact that you had to ask me about it portends well.
Program's in a good place.
Yeah. If you would like to have us continue doing this extremely silly segment, check out Raw Power for iOS and Mac. It's an advanced photo editor and manager written by a Michigan alum. It's great with RAWs and JPEGs, works with your Apple library, and adds editing features no other app has. They are 20% off right now, so check it out at rawpower.app. All right, the backcourt. I think we should probably start with Eli since he's going to be the guy who is on the court for 30 minutes a game, presuming that he does actually come back.
Yeah, I mean, his impact is going to be, as always, like more than what you see in the box score. I think the most important thing about getting him back is going to be that he will have this team organized on both ends of the floor. We have seen, especially this season, that when he was not on the floor, the team just was not the same in terms of being as sharp on their assignments. Brooks is like having a coach out there, and he's also a very capable catch and shoot guy. He's got, some decent tricks around the basket when he gets there. You know, he's not the most efficient guy, but for someone who's 6 feet, 6'1", maybe, when, you know, generous listing on the roster, he can finish pretty well. And that would get mitigated if he's the point guard instead of your two guard. And he's a really excellent on and off ball defender. So, I mean, maybe not elite NBA level in that status. We did see Dwayne Washington get him some, you know, a little bit this year, but on the whole, a really strong defensive player. And if you can start with that in your backcourt, especially given the talent that Michigan's bringing in, that's a really nice piece to build around.
Yeah, and I don't think he's got a lot of upside left. He is what he is at this point, but that is a guy who you look at his on-off splits and you're like, holy crap. He makes much more impact than his stats would suggest, and getting him back would be a massive win. Now, there are, I guess, four other guys who I think are possibilities here. Adrian Nunez didn't see any playing time this year, and kind of seems unlikely he's going to see playing time next year, but he should be mentioned.
He is heavily followed on TikTok, and it would be very valuable if he have name and image likeness stuff. So, let him profit.
He is my wife's favorite player on the team because she watches 0% of Michigan basketball and watches everything that he puts on TikTok.
But if you're asking me who the guard not named Eli Brooks is who's going to get the most minutes next year, I'm going to go with Frankie Collins. Now, Frankie Collins is a point guard who is also generously listed at 6 feet, 5'11", but he is extremely explosive. He did not dunk on Chet Holmgren, but he tried.
And we love that he did that.
And just the audacity to do that. He is super explosive, extremely good at changing directions, and deadly in the open floor. A guy who just radiates the kind of winner that Xavier Simpson was, right? Like, and similar to Xavier Simpson, he has a questionable outside shot. That is not at the same level that Simpson's outside shot was, because Simpson had a set shot for the duration of his career and could only really get it off if he was dared to shoot. Frankie Collins has a normal-looking jump shot that just doesn't go down enough right now, and so, as Ace has been saying, that's a swing skill for him. But just in terms of, like, can you get away with Frankie Collins on the court if he's not much of a shooter? Well, if you're surrounding him with, you know, Houston, Brooks, Johns, and you're running a two-man game with the center, then yes, right? Like, you can't sag off any of those guys. And so you can have what seems to me like a pretty exciting pick-and-roll battery there.
Absolutely. And Collins is enough of a finisher around the basket and an athlete where sagging off of him isn't as much of an option anyway, because when you sag off of a guy, you give him a runway. And yeah, you don't want to give Frankie Collins a runway. So he can absolutely be that primary ball handler. He may give Michigan the most upside because he's going to be the most, I would say, distribution-minded and dynamic of the potential playmakers that they put out there, while also being a good threat to finish. So if we're looking for someone who's going to open up those, you know, driving kicks to Caleb Houston, there's a chance that Juwan Howard decides that even though the personnel kind of opens it up for other options, that still playing two guards in the starting lineup, two smaller traditional guards, is the way to go. And you've got Collins next to Eli Brooks as your combination. That would not surprise me at all, especially since that then lets you once again unleash Shaundi Brown as the probable Big Ten sixth man of the year.
In the hypothetical Shaundi Brown exists case, yeah. Other options include Zeb Jackson, who will be a sophomore next year. He was never going to have a major role on this team, right? Because he comes from a tiny school in Ohio. He transfers to Montverde and then gets buried on the bench because, you know, he's behind three guys who are going to go in the top 10 in the NBA draft. So he gets a little bit of playing time this year, takes a bunch of threes that he misses almost all of, but hits a couple in the tournament. And 6'5" athlete, guy who can probably be a functional or better defender after an offseason here. Like, I think he's got a lot of defensive upside. And then it's just like, how much can he give you with the ball in his hands this year?
I mean, if the fact that he was so willing to take those threes, both as catch and shoot and particularly off the dribble, off the high screen, and looked comfortable doing it, even if they weren't going down, and then hit them in the Texas Southern game, leads me to believe that he's got that in his game. And if he does, between his size, his athleticism, that this is the dude who won the Montverde dunk contest, despite coming off the bench for them, and being on a team full of NBA athletes, you know, Michigan ran lob play, you know, baseline lob plays for him when they brought him in the game a couple times this year.
That's right.
They really like him as an athlete, and if the more point guardish skills come together, I think he gives them the highest ceiling in terms of, like, I think the ideal outcome for Michigan next season would be for Zeb Jackson to be a starter, just in terms of what that would mean for kind of the rest of the roster and also just his development. Because if you can have a 6'5 point guard with that level of athleticism who can also shoot, I mean, you know, that's an NBA player. I love Zeb Jackson's potential. It's just a matter of does it come together, because we also saw the downside of it, which is he can miss a lot of shots.
Yeah, the insiders have been talking about him a lot, like they talked about Brandon Johns, where he's just, you know, a guy who just kind of quiet and just doesn't have the confidence yet. But if he takes this summer and just kind of, you know, I am sick of being on the bench, I'm, you know, this is my opportunity. I mean, it could happen next year too, right? But there is that potential in him. I don't know what his personality makeup is that you just kind of hope that just one day he just raws up and just decides to take it, and he has that potential.
Well, the last guy who's an option is freshman Kobe Bufkin, who was a major riser over the course of this cycle. 24/7 threw him up about 40 spots in the rankings. And so he sits just inside the top 50 now. 6'4", a guy who is listed as a combo guard, so he has the ability to handle the ball, can be a secondary playmaker and possibly even a primary one down the road, although Michigan probably won't need that from him. He's the biggest option who's not Zeb or hypothetically Sean D, and he might be a little thin right now. You know, to me, you know, for a freshman guard, like, how's he shooting? Like, can he knock down threes? What's that part of his game look? That'll be a major factor in his playing time.
Yeah, and I know Matt from Endless Motor really likes his shot and also his playmaking ability. Sees him more as a kind of spot up off ball option in year one, just as he kind of matures into his role and also develops physically, because I think there's a little bit of that needs to be done in terms of filling out. But he's got a great frame. His shooting form looks good. And this is, kind of already said this with Isaiah Varens, but, you know, this is a guy who's got a good size, athleticism, and potentially shooting combination, where if that is what you've got to work with in this player's freshman year, then you're pretty good to go with Bufkin. You do start to worry with this team a little bit. Where does the creation come from? That's potentially where Frankie Collins or Zeb Jackson comes in a significant way, and also where having Hunter Dickinson as an inside-out playmaker and the high-low stuff that Juwan Howard can do really comes into play, too.
And the guys who scout Grand Rapids compare Kobe Bufkin to Dwayne Washington a lot. So, you know, if you're lamenting the fact that Ohio State got a guy like that, who, you know, maybe not the greatest creator, but he can certainly get his shot up and get it in on a pretty decent clip against, you know, anybody. That's here's our shot at it.
Yeah. So with Eli back, you mitigate pretty much the biggest negative about next year's team, is that otherwise their backcourt would be extremely, extremely young. And this is a team that runs a lot of sets, right? This is a team that has a lot of different things in their offense. And one of the reasons they were so efficient this year is because they were experienced. And even if Mike Smith wasn't experienced at Michigan, he's a guy who had been in a pretty regimented college offense before. So a lot of the things that they were asking of him were not new. Like, it's not like switching football teams, right? Like, a horn set's a horn set, a continuity ball screen's a continuity ball screen. Like, the things you're able to run efficiently at Columbia are going to be similar to the ones at Michigan. So, but coming from high school where everything is crap, there's a lot of like, I don't know if they're going to be able to be in the right spot at the right time. And I feel like Eli, the ultimate glue guy, would help out immensely there if he does come back. And
yeah, whether he's the point guard or playing off the ball, I mean, just having somebody who knows the offense and can initiate it is so important.
And then you have options who have great upside, and you only really need one of those guys to come through as a 20 to 30 minute per game guy. And then you might be able to backfill from the three a little bit with the guys who are there. Barnes could play some too, maybe. Houston could play some too, maybe. So that would be a pretty big team, but I think they have the ability to at least do that for short stretches without getting trashed defensively. And then front court looks best in America, maybe. Is that a reasonable thing to say?
I think so. There will be some contenders to emerge, I'm sure. But starting with Hunter Dickinson and Giabate and then Johns, I mean, that's – and if you count Caleb Houston as a front court player, then, I mean
– it's all sauce.
Yeah. We did. We're cooking with gas there. I mean, that's just a crazy amount of talent and what is likely to be quite a bit of production. That's just a really ideal mix of returning production and skill, and then emerging freshman talent.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned Sean D, but we should bring him up again in the backcourt just because, like, he kind of answers that. You know, right now we're saying, okay, if we get one of Bufkin or Zeb Jackson or Isaiah Barnes or Howard to, like, pop, then we've got a guy there. Or you can just get Sean D. Brown back.
Yep, that would be amazing. All right, so the season ended on a sad note, but the future is literally brighter than I think it's ever been for Michigan basketball. Including the... No, not including the Fat Five.
That was going to be bold, sir.
All right, we will catch you whenever news breaks this summer, possibly have a podcast about eggs or being outside or not having to be stay in our houses for a whole year anymore. See you guys.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. I have already forgotten what episode number this is and even what season this is, and I no longer have any idea what I'm going to say for this outro, which probably means it's time to wrap up this podcast season. Thank you for listening.
It's hard to, you know, to start thinking about, you know, would have, could have, should have. You know, it's not about that. You know, it's about, you know, how can we improve?